document for the case. This case involves and comes down from a judgment rendered by the county court of Douglas County on a application of order determining garnishing liability based upon the judgment. And actually, there, as the record shows, there were two garnishing liability cases. Two garnishing liability cases were filed by the plaintiff as two garnishments that were filed simultaneously. One I'll refer to as the child support garnishment, and the other was the Schaefer garnishment. On the child support garnishing liability, they were both set for May 2nd, and the child support garnishing liability was withdrawn because there was no merit to it. I mean, they had responded to the interrogatories to our satisfaction, and therefore we withdrew. The question before the court is, and whether or not the Schaefer judgment, as Mr. Schaefer, on the garnishing liability, was procured by fraud, and that the issue of fraud was not raised in the garnishee's application set aside for both judgments. There was no evidence as to fraud, it was not pled with specificity, and the county court entered that judgment.
Did the county court find the fraud?
I'm sorry?
Did the county court find fraud?
No.
Did the district court find fraud?
No.
So we're clearly not under the statute because the statute of limitations had passed. Is that?
That's correct. The judgments were entered. The garnishee's application was filed almost years, 9 months after the judgments were entered. So you get outside this, the 2-year statute of limitations under 25-001.
What impact does the lack of notice of the judgment have on that statute of limitations? Is it over? Does it have any impact whatsoever?
Well, the question is, and I think the heart of the case addresses that, is whether there's, if you're proceeding outside the 2-year statute of limitations, you have to show, clean proof, show some kind of due diligence. Now,
so this is an equity issue.
It's an equity issue, and, you know, those are, so the equity must first do equity, and equity doesn't protect the people sit on their rights. I mean, sit on their rights to lose them.
So is it a position, equity issue, is fraud mandatory?
Or are there other things? One of the things that is outside that gets you, I suppose gets you a hearing, gets you a judgment, or a trial on the merits of making judgment, if you plead proof fraud.
Right.
Like there's a plea proof that you exercise due diligence. Now, the dates are very important because the appellee contends that the withdrawal of the child support garnishment by liability hearing somehow meant that the Schaefer garnishee liability hearing was off. But the dates are very important because the Schaefer garnishee liability hearing had already been moved to continue the week by at the request of their counsel, and a notice had gone out on the 19th of April. On the 23rd of April, the notice to withdraw the garnishee liability of the child support went out, and that specifically referenced the hearing on May 2nd, because that hearing was still on as to that garnishee liability.
That also had a caption of amended.
The captions were different. The
application or something that they
plaintiff right? Defendant, and each of the captions were different because it said plaintiff defendant press child support office, plaintiff defendant Robert Schaefer. So they were clearly different. And under the rules of garnishee liability, there was no response file, number one, because the garnishee liability statute says that the case law probably says that garnishee liability actions are separate mini actions within the original case, and that those documents that are filed, the garnishment, precipice, the summons, the answers to the interrogatory, the garnishee liability application, the order, and anything else that's filed are the pleadings in that case. There's never been any pleadings filed in response to that garnishee liability. And the record shows that years ago, the previous garnishee liability, in the original divorce case, that there was a response filed. So kind of by the same counsel. So counsel knew that one of the things you could do and should do is file a written response because that's your pleading. So this judgment should not have been vacated. There should not have been a hearing on the merits because there was no application to get you outside, to get them outside. Statute of limitations.
So, but for the failure to give notice of the judgment, could there have been an appeal of the order for default?
Sure, sure. Well, it wasn't a default. It's on the merits because it was a trial.
But Mr. Schaefer didn't appear.
He didn't appear. His counsel record showed no evidence. Produced no evidence. And the court took judicial notice and filed until the presumption that Garnaccio was to pull them out. And they entered a separate order that was there that they made them. And if due diligence indicates when you have a hearing, and to me anyway, that when you have a hearing, and there's, you don't get a resolution, you don't get a withdrawal, you don't get a dismissal, you don't get a judgment, you don't get anything, that you better go check. And I got a pile on my desk, and if some don't come back in 7 to 10 days, I'm going to check. Because courts make mistakes, people make mistakes, that's all well and good. But the judgment creditor in this case did everything by the book, did everything they were supposed to do. And in 32 years of practice, I think a lot of judges, we never send out notice of the judgments, because that's pretty much all we would do. I mean, we take a lot of judgments. So we would be sending out judgment notices. That's what the court does.
And the court in this situation didn't do that.
The record reflects that this was in the period of transitioning into justice. The old system would generate cards and say, judgment's been issued. But a judgment was issued. A judgment card was issued to the defendant in the case, Tamara Schaefer. So, whether or not the garnishment of what may have been owed, we still contend it is owed, is notice to her that something that's owed to her is going to be taken. So,
is there a requirement there's a meritorious defense to set aside this judgment?
Yes. I think you have to allege that there's a meritorious defense. And the meritorious defense, that's a red herring in this case because they claim that the judgment has been paid. But that's an issue for on the merits in the guard liability case. Okay? And even the evidence that was proffered in this hearing in the county court claims that all that there was no money owed.
We go back on the merits, but then that meritorious defense then be offered at that hearing?
Well, the basis for the meritorious defense is that it was paid.
Would that be a basis to overcome the application for Garnaccio?
There's no evidence of that. The evidence in the original case is that there's an attorney's lien filed by myself in the original divorce, which puts everybody on notice that there's money owed, and any evidence that shows that this may have been paid is all subsequent to that. I mean, that's not in this notice. It's raised by them in the record, but no, I think the meritorious defense, even if you have meritorious defense, there's other steps that you have to take to get outside that 2-year statute of limitations. They didn't take it. They didn't plead proof of fraud. They didn't do due diligence. But the standard in the Harkin case should be applied here. I reserve the balance. Unless you have other questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Roberts, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Please report. My name is Don Roberts. I represent Schaefer in this case. We're here before this court, and I guess when the dust settles, the whole issue is my client has wanted to have a hearing on the merits of the Garnaccio liability. This case goes back to 2007, when Mr. Lynch was not paid by his client, took a judgment against her for attorney's fees in a divorce case I had in Surrey County. He then filed a garnishment in 2008 against my client, who answered the garnishment, and that garnishment was eventually withdrawn. By that time, and there is evidence in the record, by that time my client had paid all of the property settlement, money to go for the business portion of the judgment. And Mr. Lynch was well aware of that because he filed the garnishment and then withdrew. Then in 2012, he refiled the garnishment. Now, he claimed that there is a big distinction between the fact that he claimed that he filed it in the first case, it's Schaefer painting, which is my client's business. And now in the second, he filed it against Schaefer. But the fact is, that's Mr. Schaefer. He answered the second garnishment as well, so I don't owe any money. The hearing was scheduled for May 2nd. I did call and indicate I couldn't be there. I made an appearance of record. I filed any kind of an answer to the liability hearing. You go in here and present your evidence.
Your response served as your pleading.
Well, I didn't file a response. I just filed an appearance of counsel.
Only filed an appearance, but
yes.
You didn't have a response.
There was no reason. In my practice, I've never filed a response to a correction of liability. He's already answered it. The statute says that he didn't answer it. If you don't answer it at all, I'll forward to their satisfaction. I didn't know what the allegations were as to not their satisfaction. He said, I don't owe any money. So there's nothing to file. Just go to the hearing and produce your evidence at that time as to whether or not your money is. So the hearing, the notice of his case, Your Honor noted, questioning Finch, the notices were clearly confusing. After the hearing was changed, the notice that came out was that the amended application, this is the only one that was pointed out against my client, had been withdrawn. No question, as Mr. Finch said, people make mistakes. There's enough blame to go around on some of these fees for everybody. But the fact of the matter is, that's how I interpret it, because it was an amended, the only amended application for the RSU liability was against my client and not against the child support payment center. So I didn't attend the hearing and told my client we'd have to go, presumably because he realized, oh, when I filed in 2008, he didn't know anything. The only thing now, we even attached copies in the original pleading down in Sarpon County, copies of the documents showing that my client had paid all the money at that point in time. Judgment was taken. And this is not a matter of requirement, but I never received a call from Mr. Finch, even though I had made an appearance in the case, never received a call. Normally what I would do is I'd step out and call and say, Your Honor, they're in here, he's called to see if he's coming, he's going to show up or not, or he's going to be late or whatever. I never received that call. That's not a requirement, but something I think professional courtesy ends. And then the judgment was entered. I never received a copy of the judgment from Mr. Finch. I received a card from the court indicating that there was judgment entered. And as Judge Rettlesworth, her decision, it was a very detailed decision as to what's happening here, what happened here, indicated that had I received that notice of the judgment being entered, the card that typically comes out, I would have filed a motion to set aside, I would have invited aside a denied decision because I would have been within the statute.
When you said earlier the notices were confusing?
Yes.
I don't know if it can be sorted out, but could you expand on that?
I sure can. As a matter of fact, in Judge Rettlesworth's decision, she even set out what was confusing for everybody. She found that the caption for the withdrawal is notably inconsistent. In other words, that goes to the fact that he had three names on there at different times, and so the Joe Minch versus my client,
or
Joe Minch versus, sorry. Yeah, it's Tamara.
Yeah,
Tamara. So it's Joe versus Tamara, and then against my client, and Joe versus Tamara, and the depressed and charitable kids. So there were three people on two, the same case number. So the judge found that it was inconsistent. The body of the withdrawal doesn't identify the part, so in the body part it says being withdrawn, the amended application being withdrawn.
And the meaning of that is it just poses the question, what's being withdrawn?
Well, what's being withdrawn, and who is it being withdrawn from? Is it being withdrawn from the Rest of Chocolate Payment Center, that application, or is it being withdrawn from my client? And finally, she indicated the service of the amended application was also unnecessarily served on me. So when he withdrew it from the Nebraska Child Support Payment Center, there's no reason that I should have received a notice that he was withdrawing that garnishment. But it came to me too. So when it came to me, obviously mine was the amended application that he was withdrawing. It was sent to me, I presume, that in fact was a withdrawal of his claim against my client. I didn't show up for the hearing, and just coincidentally, then, 2 years and 2 months later is when he started to run. I'm not saying that it was fraudulent that he did that. I'm not saying that it was specifically proven in any way, but if it looks like a duck, I think he just went into the statute frame. So it's just nothing I could try to set aside at that point in time, other than an equitable argument that we didn't get notice for the purposes of being able to set that aside. The appeal that he's taken it from is Judge Rellsdorf's appeal. I think he has to show proof that, in this case, that it was an abuse of discretion so far as her determination of the ethical thing.
Is that what's our standard of review?
I think it is in this case. I think it's an equitable appeal. I think we have to establish that the judge abused her discretion. And Judge Rellsdorf's opinion was very clear. Her opinion was very clear and concise about what equitable power she used. Now, could this all have been avoided? I guess believed that the withdrawal was with the court case, I guess. Yes, it could have been. It also could have been avoided if I received a call from Mr. Mensch, or if I received a copy of the judgment, or if I received a letter from him saying, how did your client not pay this? Or if the notice that originally was sent withdrawing the application, the amended application, was not confusing. Or if the levy had started more than 2 years after the judgment was there. But all of that could have been avoided. All of that could have been reasons for us not having to be here today. As I've indicated, the only thing my client wants, if he owes money, she isn't, and Mr. Munch is entitled to money, so be it. But to get a hearing on the merits, I think, is the only equitable thing to do in this case. We were there on the record, I had a notice there that I was in the case. Other than the fact that I in fact misinterpreted that motion, we wouldn't be here today. And I think the big push on this, at least I'm trying to see it from Mr. Mensch's side, is that he has this judgment, and he doesn't want to have it heard on the merits because there is no merits to it. That's what I think is really coming down to. So he's trying as hard as he possibly can to keep that judgment in place.
Mr. Roberts, I'd like to touch on the standard of review with you. When the district court reviews the county court's granting of the motion to vacate, I think our case law would be pretty clear it's for abuse of discretion. But when we review what the district court did, does that make sense that it would be the same standard, or would it be simply error on the record or something different?
I don't know in this case if it makes any difference, quite frankly. I think if it's an abuse of discretion, I don't believe she abused her discretion. And if it's an error standard, if you look at the assignments of error that he made to this court in his brief, he indicated that it was after the 2 years statute of limitations, and we failed to plead or prove any facts that would allow the court to exercise separate jurisdiction. Well, I think Judge Rellsdorf's opinion is clear that there are facts that allow her to exercise her equity jurisdiction.
What is our customary standard in equitable manner?
What I'm saying is that you have to show that the court, trial court approval, abuse its discretion.
Well, the general equitable standard of review would be de novo on the record, wouldn't it?
No, on the record. But you still have to, because you're looking at the record, you still have to find that she abused her discretion in making that decision.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have time for rebuttal? 2 minutes. Mr. Mensch.
The 2008 garnishment in Sarpy County was against the company, not against Mr. Schaefer, because
standing for this whole time. From the modification that I was involved in forward and subsequent actions in Sarpy County in the divorce. The records in Sarpy County District Court is one that no payments were made. If you're paying off a property settlement and you want to make a record of it, file something. You file a receipt. You file money with the clerk and the clerk pays it out. So the fact that the record in Sarpy County clearly shows that there could be money owed. That's number one. Number two, Mr. Roberts said, all of his practice, he's never filed a response to Garner liability, but in fact, in the 2008 garnishment in Sarpy County, he did, and that's part of the building exceptions.
Would you like to address the standard of review?
I would. I agree with you, Justice. I think the standard of care is the note on the record.
Your proposition is it's an equity, and our word standard would be the no bond record.
Right.
Your proposition.
Right. Mr. Hopper said that there was no reason to send him the withdrawal of the child support guard liability. There is, because he's counsel record. And it's customary, and I think mandated by the rules, that all counsel get all pleadings in all matters in the case. And that's why it was sent to him. The other issue that we have to talk about is Mr. Roberts testifying, which I objected to at the time.
Thank you very much. That takes us to the last case of the day, which is State v. Damon T. King.